Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and ways to go within to find wisdom and peace. Today I am delighted to welcome Paul Selig, author of his newest book and the first in a trilogy entitled The Book of Mastery, which may lead you to a journey of self-development and self-mastery of your energies, emotions, and dreams. Hello, Paul, and thank you for joining us for what I know will be a most empowering experience for our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Paul, as listeners of Healing From Within are so well aware, my guests and I share our personal, often extraordinary experiences, allowing for new insights and ways to value our unique personal paths and destiny, allowing for utilizing universal energy to remember our true divine nature. In today's episode, Paul, who is considered one of the foremost contributors to the field of channeled literature working today, and who is the former director of MFA Creative Writing Program of Goddard College and served on the faculty of NYU for more than 25 years, will share a spiritual experience that happened in 1987 that left him clairvoyant. Selig maintains a practice as an intuitive in New York City. He is the author of I Am the Word, the Book of Love and Creation, and the Book of Knowing and Worth. Paul, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood for a remembrance of maybe a person, a place, maybe an event that may have foretold something about their future as an adult and the life and work and interests that they might have later on. Can you think back for a moment?
Well, there was an experience. I was probably, I don't think I could have been any more than 5 years old, 4 or 5, because my brother, who's only a couple of years younger than I, was in a crib, because I remember seeing the crib in the room. But it was my only out-of-body experience, but I had an experience of a being hovering over my bed, and it was very beautiful, and it was glowing gold. And I remember embroidery on what I had called robes at the time, but it was talking to me as I lay in the bed. And I remember myself looking up at this being, and also I remember, you know, floating on the ceiling, looking down at myself in the bed, having the conversation with them, you know, at the same time. And it was the only time I ever had an experience like that. But it was very significant, and I talked about it at the time, and I wrote about it when I was older. And it always meant something to me, and I think it still does. And sometimes I think, you know, I was, you know, I don't know whether I was,
well,
I was getting warned.
No. I will say this. You were a sensitive child. You were born with a gift, perhaps, to pursue this work. You were born with caring about your little brother. It was there was empathy already there going on. And how old were you at the time when that happened?
I would assume about 5 years old.
And you were old enough to perhaps remember it. See, any earlier, 3 or so, maybe you wouldn't have remembered it. So that they wanted you to remember it, the guide, the angel, the spirit, the higher vibrational being or loved one, whatever name we assign to what lives in another dimension or reality of energy. We know, you and I, and many of our listeners, that this is a reality. It is not make-believe and imagination. It is a fact of life, because life is eternal and continuous. So let's go on to an event in 1987 that profoundly changed you. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure. You know, it was 1987. I had just begun to wake up to the possibility of a spiritual life. I had been raised something of an atheist, and I'd had an experience already that had led me to think that there might be more to life than what I had been taught. And so I was kind of open, I think, to the possibility of something, and I heard that there was this event happening that people were calling the harmonic convergence and that people were going to be waking up. And I thought, in my innocence, I think at that time, which I thought, well, you know, if there is a God and you can ask to be woken up, why wouldn't it happen? You know, mm-hmm. So I just went up to my roof the night of this thing, and I was trying to teach myself how to meditate. And for all I know, I was hyperventilating. I don't really know what caused it, but I had an experience of energy, you know, moving through my body, what I now would call the chakras, although at the time I wasn't that adept. And it sort of left me frozen on the roof and sort of swaying in this energy. It was very palpable to me. And after that, I started seeing little lights around people. And again, whether the little lights just started showing up around that time was coincidental to the experience, I'll really probably have no way of knowing. People later said that it sounded like what happened to me was a spontaneous Kundalini awakening or a Shakti Pa. I really don't know.
I'll tell you what it possibly was, because I'm a Reiki master teacher. Dr. Yusui, who is the founder of modern Reiki energy healing, studied for years, and one day he said, I'm going to sit on a mountain and try to ask God and pray and meditate and figure out what all these symbols are and what I have learned. And what he had was a downloading of energy through his crown chakra and third eye, which is called an attunement, which alters the channels of the body to receive higher energy, and which makes you the beginning of a healer or intuitive or a lifelong disciple of this type of energy. And that's what you had?
Well, it may have been. You know, I don't know what it was. I do a lot of work with energy now, and my guides, you know, attune people, and the books themselves are attunements, so I'm comfortable with that. But for me, I know that what I think I may have needed at that time in my life was something that I could hold and know, and, you know, that would bypass my own resistance. And I think the fact that it was a physical experience for me, and that there were consequences to it that were productive, is one of the things that actually did sort of allow me to stay on a path that I might not have stayed upon otherwise.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, when I had my first attunement, I understood nothing about the chakras and healing and a consciousness surviving death. I was guided there by a friend, and but during the attunement and after the attunement, I realized that it was a blessing and an amazing opportunity for growth, and I was very grateful to be part of this work. It took a long time after that to develop. That was only the beginning, but you voiced it pretty much the same way, that it was necessary for you to have that physical feeling, as I did, to conquer many of our childhood thoughts which were not in alignment with this. So let's go on to telling us about your guides and how they provide practical ways to heighten our abilities, our aptitudes, and our sense of personal excellence.
I think those are the publishers. That's the publisher's language for what the books do. Let me see if I can explain it in the way that I understand it. Now, the guides that I work with write books through me. They dictate the books, so I don't write any of the books. I sit in a chair and I close my eyes, and the books are dictated, and the recordings of the channeling sessions are then transcribed and published, and there's really no editing involved. The work that comes through, and this is now, there are four books in print and another that was just finished, the dictation was finished a little over a week ago. So what the guides are doing is, through the texts, which they say are encoded with vibration, they're supporting the reader and aligning to their own capacity to hold a higher level of vibration. The guides say we're all radios. We're always in broadcast. The broadcast that we hold is our consciousness. And the books themselves are sort of supporting us and attuning the radios that we are to play the higher vibration. It's not a lot, it's not really dissimilar, I think, to what you probably had as a Reiki attunement or the attunements that I had when I was studying a form of healing, but the guides are working through an encoding of language to do this. So, you know, the guides are teachers. They come through me to teach. I've been working with them in one form or another for quite a number of years now, although they only began lecturing through me in the way that they are now in about 2008, 2009, although I'd been doing this work in one form or another probably since I was maybe 30 or so. So it's been a real process for me of being developed and sort of learning to trust what comes through me and step out of the way. But the guides are teachers, you know, they're teaching a higher level of consciousness, and they're teaching us to sort of re-identify ourselves as the truth of who we are, which they would say is the divine self, or sometimes they use the word Christ itself, the true self,
mm-hmm.
Or the infinite self, and to stop sort of over-identifying as a personality structure, which they say keeps us sort of claiming a historical identity that is very, very limited.
Absolutely. Very well said. Now, Jeffrey Kripal, authors of The Impossible, wrote in the foreword to your book,
mm-hmm.
Paul demonstrates the central teaching of the guides about mastery, that we have yet to claim who we really are, what we really are, and how we can truly serve. And all those words are very meaningful to me, who mm-hmm. we truly are, what we really, and how we can serve, and to be a master.
Mm-hmm.
As a Reiki master teacher, please tell us, your book is entitled The Book of Mastery,
mm-hmm.
and what can people know about that word and personal excellence?
Well, I think you can't be a master and a victim at the same time, which is the first thing the guides teach, and they say actually that knowing your mastery really is about knowing your ability to impact and inform the physical reality that we're existing in. So it's about supporting us in claiming the divine self, or you can call it the master within, or the divine self.
Or the soul, or your soul connection.
You can call it that, I suppose, if you like. I think you can call it anything you want. I think it really is, it's whatever's going to work for you. But the true self, or the divine self, who knows who and what she truly is, who exists outside of linear time, but can be expressed through the form, which is the what that we are. I know what I am, which is the manifestation of the divine in form,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, an eternal statement. It's not a transient statement. It's always true. The guides say when these things are true, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. They're claims of truth that are always present. So claiming that self and the divine self in its purview, and they use the claim, the divine self says through you, I am here, I am here, I am here. The divine self claiming its purview simply means that you're informing the entire reality that you exist in through the consciousness that can be held as the divine self, which they would say is distinctly different from what the small self might claim. The small self might know him or herself through what she's been taught, the achievements, how they are placed in society, and the true self, or the divine self, knows itself beyond all those structures.
Knows itself as an unlimited energy
mm-hmm.
for potential love and compassion and eternal
yes.
life, where the ego or personality or labels that societal training and parental
mm-hmm.
guidance allows us to have sees us in a very small and limited way.
Mm-hmm.
And we
exactly.
are obviously, for those of us who are feeling this depth of connection to all that is, know that that is not real. It's not reality. The
mm-hmm.
reality is that we are always growing, expanding, and evolving. Now, the guides go even further and instruct us how to improve life for others and ultimately for global humanity. Now, looking at the many world problems and inequalities right now, worldwide, here in this country and worldwide, how are we to begin with this knowledge from the guides and the truth?
Well, it's a large teaching, and I don't know that I can give it to you too brief a message, but I'll try. One of the basic teachings of the guides is that you cannot be the light and hold another in darkness. It's just not possible. It's hypocrisy. when you know who you truly are as a divine being, you also have to know who everybody else is, like them or not, or agree with them or not. As you begin to hold that vision, you're actually supporting your world and aligning to that level of consciousness. What you affirm as negative, you claim in negativity, and frankly, that sort of binds you to it at that level of consciousness or vibration. So if you want to damn something, it damns you right back, and that's a very, very old metaphysical teaching. When you begin to realize who and what you are in manifestation, the level of alignment that you hold or the consciousness that you hold actually imprints itself on what you see. So how you see the world as a divine being is very, very different than how you see the world when you're cranky and you want to kick the cat. It's really very, very simple. But how that happens, according to the guides that I work with, really does inform the structure of what you see. So the perceiver is actually transforming or informing what he or she sees by the level of consciousness that she brings to it. So essentially what you're doing is you're lifting your world through the vibration that you hold. The guides teach, they call it the kingdom, and they say that the kingdom is the awareness of the divine in all manifestation, but they say that the one who exists at that level of consciousness is the one who knows who she is. It's not some place in a cloud. It's a higher octave that's already playing here and now, but you have to be in alignment to it to be in the experience of it.
Well,
as you align to it, you call it into being in manifestation.
Yeah, and as we get away from this sense of separation or the differences between people and nations and groups, universes, we come to understanding the alignment. In my own book, I wrote something about this in support of separation and true self. In The Living Spirit, I wrote, loving ourselves and all of humanity is made even more difficult by the man-made inventions that seek to separate us. Well, we can be separated by political or socioeconomic difference. There has been no more divisive an issue than religion. Please do not take this as a disparagement of religious beliefs. Only when we use our beliefs to exclude others, then we may be ignoring the central message of God and his messengers, that we are all connected to universal energy and to each other and to this force of light radiating goodness, which will not bring us into negativity or being a victim or separation. And that's how the world's going to be helped, I would imagine, when enough people can give out from their own being this energy of compassion for all, even those who are not so easy to love, then there'll be a shift, a greater shift. I would think that might be so. Now, as a spiritual teacher, medium, and educator, what experiences do you fondly remember that have brought you a greater awareness of gratitude and self-worth?
Well, I don't consider myself a spiritual teacher. You know, I consider myself a channel, and I can be a, I can explain the teachings as best as I understand them that come through me, but I'm not the author of the teachings themselves. So my own experience with the work is probably not a lot different than the experiences of other people who are working with these texts and having an experience of them. I mean, my experience of phenomena at this point or higher vibration or consciousness has become very commonplace for me now. I've stopped thinking of it as something extraordinary. I'm known as a medium for the living, which is odd. I had studied healing when I was in my early 30s from actually one of Dr. Usai's, a protege of Madame Takata's, who was, I think, the first Reiki master in the U.S.
Yes.
Who was now doing her own work. She was quite a wonderful teacher for me. But I found that when I had my hands on people, I started to hear things for them. And, you know, I was opening up as a clairaudient and then as a physical empath, feeling what was going on in other people's bodies without really knowing what I was doing. And so that was the beginning of my sense of physical reality becoming transformed through my experience with energy. And then over the 20 or so years that followed, I've gotten very used to it. So I'm used to being a battery for a level of vibration now that sort of, you know, fills the room that is beyond me, and I don't claim any credit for it at all. And my life and my whole life has been transformed by this. Some days I'm cranky about it because it's not what I might have chosen for myself. I had a very other plan for me. You know, I was a college teacher for a quarter of a century, and I very much enjoyed doing that. And now I'm full-time with this work because that's been the requirement of the work for me to keep showing up for it. But the gifts have been the gifts of spirit. There's no question about
yes,
it. It's also the
ability
to know it.
You're not only channeling. You are a being, a force of the words and the way you express yourself. You are a true master and a teacher and an educator. And I can hear your words that are different from the text that I read, and you explain them so gently and wisely and clearly. Clarity is very important for people who are first beginning to delve into these matters, to not be confused and to feel the passion you have for it and the love you have for it. So I think you were really chosen for many, many reasons, and you're doing a wonderful job, and I'm very thankful to be able to talk to you and hear your words. So, yes, well, we will go on to, why do the guides often refer to she when giving you answers to your questions?
Well, they're not calling me a she. Initially, in the first book, which was I Am the Word, they exclusively used the male pronoun. And there was a woman who's been on the phone for all of these texts, although the last book, which was just finished channeling, was done before groups of students, so she wasn't always present for those. But Victoria Nelson, who has been the active listener for all of the texts, questioned the guides about, you know, their use of the word man, and they said, well, we don't mean man as in male, we mean man as in humanity.
Oh, I see.
But the interesting thing was they began to take accountability for their pronouns shortly after that, and they often use she when they're describing, you know. They'll say when mankind realizes that she must evolve, you know, and so it's their grammar. I mean, the good news is that, you know, the publisher and the proofreader at Tarcher Penguin, you know, isn't allowed to mess with the sentence structure of the book. So if the guides are going to mix up their pronouns in one sentence, that's the way the audience is going to get it. But that's just how they deliver it.
Okay, and that's good, because there really is no gender in energy. And so God source or universal source or divine source or God, whatever we call it, it is just energy of creation and evolution. So I kind of like that you described it. Mm-hmm. You know, some people will say she is the earth or the birth of life.
Yeah.
And I like man as humanity. Mm-hmm. We're all one and unified. Yeah. So that's a very, very good way to look at it. Now, Paul, what would you want readers to most focus on in their own lives after reading your book? Or what would the guides perhaps most like us to start at this time in the spiritual evolution or revolution that's going on worldwide to help the changes that are happening? What might we focus on?
Well, what I actually hear when you ask that is claiming the divine self is the truth of who we really are, and to stop negating it, because we get frightened it could possibly be so. So the truth of who we are, they say, is an aspect of the Creator manifested in form. And in order for us to be able to claim that, we need to believe or know that we're worthy of it. My guides use the words know and realize interchangeably. They say that to know something is to realize it. So to realize, I guess, that the divine self is the truth of who we are, and begin to operate from that level of self-identification. That doesn't mean that we're God. It means we're an aspect of God, as is everybody else, and that we are co-creators, you know, with the reality that we express in and through. So on for the newbie with this, I would say trust that you have the right to be this in the face of all evidence to the contrary. You know, the guides work with claims of truth, and they say that when something is true, it's always true. It's not a convenient truth. And they say the claim, I know who I am, I know what I am. I know how I serve. That's I know who I am as an aspect of the divine. I know what I am as the expression of it. And how you serve is how you're most fully realized or expressed as this in your life. Those things are always true because they're always true for the true self. You know, the personality self may be frightened or confused or frustrated, but the divine self, which I think they would say is always present as you, is still accessible and can be known.
And perhaps amused by life and change and growth, not afraid like we are in our physical thinking.
Yes.
That is wonderful. So I would like to say, yes, the God is within us and we are within the God. The universe is within us. And we are within the universe. And if we think in terms of that, even just hearing that brings a moment of quiet and peace. And then we can be in that alignment or connection that's so valuable and beautiful to helping us evolve and to helping the world. So I want to thank you, Paul Selig, author of your newest book, The Book of Mastery, which offers readers ways to realize that everything that has ever happened to them, whether you judge it as good or bad, really is neither, it's just experience, is happening for them in special alignment with the universe so they may remember ultimately their true self and their potential for self-actualization. To purchase Paul's books, go to paulselig.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, Paul and I have taken you on a journey of truth, offering you the wisdom of now and forever, which is there for the person who wishes to go beyond the mundane, societal, familial, and patterns of childhood impressions to find the world in its entirety and our essence in its magnificent soul being. As Paul writes, "Now if you decide this, I have the right to be where I stand, to know myself as I am, and to decide for myself that the path I walk is the path required for me to learn my own needs, my own way, my own truth. As you align to this, I have the right to be where I stand, you make a very important decision that no matter what has happened to you, you are still meritful." Paul and I would have you know that it is in the asking that we are answered, and in the seeking that we come to know, and that in being, we are the reflection and expression of universal energy and may claim our awareness of the eternal nature of creation. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing from Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to read and listen to authors who explore our human and divine influences, spirituality, health, relationships, and the arts in search of knowing ourselves and the universe in a more expansive way. Shows may also be heard on DreamVision7Radio.com, WebTalkRadio.net, and thank you for listening.